an AppleViz original.
It is the month of September. Apple have just had an event, and there were no iPhones. This truly is a strange year we are living in. My name is Dave Nason. This is the AppleViz Extra, and I am joined here by my two colleagues from the AppleViz team, Scott Devert and Tyler Stephen. Thanks for coming, guys. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good. Just, time flies, doesn't it?
Sure it does. 2020 is a strange year. So we have, as I say, we have a September event, but iPhones, not yet, but they had some other stuff to tell us about today. And for the first time ever, I believe, they had audio description in the keynote. Did you, did either of you guys watch it with AD?
I did, too. I was actually pretty, at first I was following along. I ended up having to switch back and forth. You know, I do the captioning a lot now, but I had to switch over to the audio because the audio description obviously doesn't come through the captioning. So like when they were showing videos, it was kind of hard, you know, to follow it for me, you know, but it was understandable. And I thought they did a pretty good job with the audio description.
Yeah, I agree. Tyler, did you? You did as well, yeah?
Yeah, I did. I did the TV app. I mean, it was pretty good. I don't really... This is the first time I think I watched audio description for an Apple event. I know that in the past, when they, you know, back when live events were a thing, after the fact, you could watch the audio description. I just never did. It provides some, you know, interesting... you know, context to the videos. But it wasn't like something that changed my overall perception of the products or of the event. I mean, there was nothing earth-shattering that I was missing with, you know, without being able to see.
Yeah. It just gives you, it includes us a bit more in kind of what's going on, I suppose. In the presentation, I think the one area it's missed, and I don't have a solution for it, is when they go, and this product will be available in these countries, and it's just a still, but they don't have time for the audio describer to actually read those countries out. So, you know, we're still missing it. But apart from that, I think it's great that they're now doing it. People have been asking for it on the live stream for a long time. And obviously this being a pre-recorded thing, as opposed to the usual live events, they had that opportunity. So I think it was good. They told us from the very beginning, this was going to be about two products, Apple Watch and iPad, and that is what we got. That's what the rumors had kind of indicated over the last few weeks as well. So we started off with the watch. They told us all the benefits, the health benefits, and showed us a video of various people using it, and then announced the Series 6. Tyler, are you seeing much difference in the Series 6, or what are the key points for you from the new watch?
For me, the two big differences that they were presenting were blood oxygen monitoring and the S6 chip, which is supposedly 20% faster. I don't have an Apple Watch, and this is too incremental in my view, for me to go out and get one. I've thought about on and off getting one over the years, you know, especially because I'm working out more at home. These last couple months, but I don't think I have enough of a use case to get an Apple Watch. You know, I already have my iPhone and my Mac, and another device for beta testing. So yeah, I don't think I have enough of a use where I would really use an Apple Watch, and this doesn't really change anything for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Scott, you have a Series 5, do you?
I do, and I will continue to. I really don't see the need for me personally to monitor my blood oxygen level right now. You know, I'm breathing, which by the way, I like. You lose a very important part of life if you can't breathe. So they tell me.
It's crucial.
But you know, it's my watch is fast enough. When I connect my Braille display with it, will that be different? It might be. I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but as of now, I'm pretty happy with my 5, but I don't think this was aimed at 5.
No.
I think this was aimed more at those people on Series 1 and 2, even 3 maybe, you know, even though the 3 is a current model. even going from, say, a 3 to a 5 or a 2 to a 5 is a pretty big leap. So a 3 to a 6 or a 2 to a 6 is a pretty, pretty darn big jump, you know, as far as speed is concerned.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think it's aimed at people with 5. Even I'm on a 4, and I don't feel any particular need to update. I think it's still running nice and fast for me, really. The blood oxygen, it's great that they're adding more health sensors like that, but in of itself, I can't see myself upgrading just for one new sensor. But it would be nice to have it whenever I do upgrade.
Another thing I was just going to say was something that sort of irks me a little is they're not including a power adapter with this watch.
Did I hear that right? I thought I did.
Yeah. And the reason given, and this is legit, you know, in terms of the issues of waste, it does provide more waste. But at the same time, if you're going to cut out something, you include, cut that out of the price. Don't make someone buy, you know, they're spending all the more money for something that used to be included. So if you're going to have the legit goal, you want to cut the waste, see what you can do to take that. It's still the same price. Like that's where that bothers me, where they don't include that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think there'll be a lot of people saying that. And that we heard about this that's a foreshadowing of what's coming with the iPhone. I think we all know that the same thing is happening with the iPhone, and people have said the price probably won't go down, but maybe it makes up for the price, the extra price of 5G modems or something like that is what people are sometimes saying, but that's not the case with the watch. So there is a legitimate
argument. It's better for the environment. Come on.
Well, I do fully agree with that. Like, even if it's, whether that's Apple's true motivation or not, or it's maybe a partial motivation, you know what I mean? And maybe they're also happy to have a few extra dollars in their bank account as a result. Yeah. But I still legitimately do like the fact that there is an environmental benefit to that personally.
Yeah. What I suspect, and it's only speculation, obviously, is that they're going to come out with this other charging system, not the original AirPower, but something similar to it soon, and they'll have something that wirelessly charges your watch and your phone, you know, like kind of like AirPower.
Yeah.
It's the same but only different, you know, that sort of thing. But they will they'll do that, and they'll say, well, you know, you can buy this, and it's wireless. It's really good for the environment.
Just like when they took the headphone jack out of the iPhone and at the same time released AirPods, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, that's sort of old news, unlike a lot of this other stuff. You know, it's just, that's kind of how it goes. My thing is, okay, fine, you're taking it away for environmental reasons, then you shouldn't be selling me the charger at an additional cost. You should completely remove it from the market and come up with something new and innovative that addresses it.
Yeah. It will be a subject of much debate. And I think on balance, I think it's a good thing they're doing it, but I think there is an argument that there should have been a price, you know, it should have been reflected in the price as well.
Oh, I think so as well. I really do. I mean, we're not getting anything, you know, on top of what we would anyway. I mean, if you look at the pricing structure, that's always how it's been.
Yeah.
You know, when the Series 4 came out, it replaced the Series 3 in terms of price. And when the 5 came out, of course, the 4 disappeared, but the 5 then had the same price as the 4.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. You know, they really should pass a little of that on to the customer.
Yeah. But and as well, the other part of the announcement, I suppose, that people may or may not be interested in is new colors. Sometimes people get excited by new colors. So there's a blue one now for the first time, as well as a gold and a new black finish, I believe, as well. So I'm curious what a blue one would look like on a watch, but hey. Oh, and new bands as well.
I'm
going to
guess it's blue.
Whether it'll work, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And a new band that requires no effort at all. So the solo loop that you just, sounds like it's just a bracelet that you just pop over your wrist. So, because we can't handle loops, we can't handle having to use a buckle. So,
all right, I agree with you. that's the only thing that I thought was really interesting, but I also kind of don't understand it at the same time, and maybe one of you guys do, is, okay, they did this thing with the family sharing on the watch, and that's great, but why only have it on cellular models? I would think the majority of people, I mean, depending on your need, would want Wi-Fi. You know, if they're connected to a Wi-Fi network, as a lot of the people they're marketing it toward are, shouldn't that be good enough?
Yeah, so this is the new ability to have, essentially, it's like you can have multiple Apple Watches connected to a single iPhone, or at least related to a single iPhone, so that a parent, for example, can buy watches for their children without having to buy iPhones for their children, so they can have control or manage their children's watches from their own iPhone, which I think is something I've heard parents say they'd like, because they don't want to buy their kids an iPhone, but they want them to be able to have the watch, for whether it's for fitness or whether it's just for tracking them in other ways. It's a good feature, but yeah, and it makes me curious, we don't even have the cellular watch in Ireland at the moment, as far as I know. So
I thought the EU and the countries over there had finally gotten it. That's unfortunate.
Maybe it's changed since I last looked. It is possible, but it definitely, this time last year, it wasn't. I know that much. But yeah, I wouldn't. I'd agree. I've no interest in having a cellular watch anyway. I think the Wi-Fi is fine. And like you say, there is it's a fair bit more expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $100 more for a cellular model. I don't know. Is that, Tyler, do you know, is that still current, or did they raise it even a little higher? I think it's $100 difference, right?
I think that's the difference. But then again, you still have to pay your carrier for, I believe, at least you have to pay your carrier for the monthly plan, which even if I won an Apple Watch, I would get the Wi-Fi one. I would not be paying AT&T another
for
a watch. Yeah.
Well, and I think the going rate, at least here in the U.S., I don't have any idea what it is outside of the U.S., is, you know, $10 to $15 per line for an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to factor that cost into it as well.
I only pay €10 for the phone as it is, and I'm not paying more. But
yeah, I mean, you know, you could buy a cellular model and not activate it, and it'll still function as a, you know, as a Wi-Fi watch. My question is, how deeply is the family sharing thing tied into your carrier? Like, could you do that? Could you just not activate the cellular chip and then use Wi-Fi only?
I don't know. And like it says, each person gets their own individual phone number and everything. So it seems like it's pretty deeply integrated into the whole package, I suppose. But yeah, we'll see.
I mean, I see the value in the cellular chip if you can afford it, you know, especially for folks that have balance issues or other, you know, issues that might cause them to fall. You know, they may not have a Wi-Fi network. They may not be in range of one. But on the other hand, you know, for your 12-year-old kid, your 15-year-old kid that wants to track their fitness and you want to track their fitness, you know, and all this stuff that they were talking about with education, you know, that wouldn't seem to be necessary.
Yeah.
The only other thing I could think of is real-time location tracking. So if a person's, you know, walking from home to school or something, and say a parent wants to have an interactive location, that's the only thing where you could get more precise with a cellular connection.
I suppose as well, being able to call them without them having to have a phone, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's I think it's a welcome feature. I think, yeah, it's valid to ask, you know, can it, or why, if not, why can it not be a Wi-Fi only option? But I think it's a good feature. And then the other things they talked about were things like watch faces, which some of it is very visual, but there could be new functionality in some watch faces as well. Some of the new ones we'll see when we get to play with them. And the always on display, which has no interest to me personally, really, except if, you know, it's an aesthetic thing for us more if you care about that. But if you can't see the screen, you don't care if it's always on. People will
be happy. It's not like before where they, you know, they came out with complications, they came out with watch faces that allowed for more complications. you know, I can see value in that, but I don't really think that was anything they were looking at with the newer watch faces. And the other thing is, how many complications do you really want on your watch? You know, eventually it's going to be too crowded for anybody.
Oh, yeah, completely. I think the Infograph has the most. It's like 8 or something, is it? Or 6 or 8, I can't remember.
Yeah. But
that's probably about as much as you could handle, really, on one face. They also then announced a new, in quotes, Apple Watch SE. It's got the Series 5 chip in it, the S5 system on a chip. And the same design, as far as I could tell, as the current and previous models as well, the 4, 5, 6, I think they all have the same design. Did they say much more? I didn't catch much more about the SE than that, to be honest with you, just that it's a...
It's $279, I caught that.
Mm.
Well, the thing about the... Is it the Watch SE? Is that what we're calling it? Mm-hmm. I think that's right, right? Yeah. You know, that's sort of the mid-range. You know, if you're really looking for the entry level, you still probably ought to go with the 3. The thing I noticed they did not talk about was water resistance. So if you're a swimmer and you want to track that information, you probably still might have to go with the Series 3 because they didn't mention anything about it being waterproof.
I think all the subsequent ones are. They didn't, but I think all the subsequent ones are. So
okay.
I would go on the assumption that it is. But I didn't hear the price of the 3, and that would be maybe if you, I don't know if you guys call it a price for the 3, because that would be part of $199. Okay. I think I would be encouraging for $80. I would say go for the SE, because the 3 is already 3 years old, you know.
Yeah, but you'll get a charger.
In terms of future proofing. True. So that amounts to $100 in the difference, really.
True. But, you buy like 3 of them. oh, wait, that's bad for the environment. I'm sorry.
In reality, though, I think it's good that they have the 3 there as an entry level, but I just feel it's a bit... If I knew somebody asked me for a recommendation, I would point them towards the SE rather than the 3 myself.
Oh, yeah, I would too. I mean, you know, it has the hardware of the 6. I mean, they did exactly what they did with the iPhone SE. And, well, I have an iPhone SE, so, you know... Who am I to say one way or the other? I mean, I would, if somebody said to me, okay, I'm going to give you a Series 3 or an SE for your birthday, which would you want? I would, unless I was really, you know, conscious of that other person's wallet, say if Apple told me that, I would definitely go with an SE over the Series 3. A lot more processing power there. And, you know, it does have, all the modern stuff. So
I think it's as well,
I agree.
The 3 would be, it's probably fine today, but 2 years from now, your SE will probably still be working fine, but the 3 will probably need an upgrade. You know, that would be my thinking. So
I'm curious, has anybody, either one of you run, well, I guess Tyler doesn't have a watch. So, and you don't have a 3 either, do you, Dave?
No, I have a 4.
Okay. And have you tried that on watchOS 7 yet?
Oh yeah. I've been running it all summer. Yeah.
And how's it working out for you?
Very good. It was a bit crashy at times during the summer, but apart from that, I haven't had a hitch, if I'm honest. It's worked. Okay. It's worked great. So.
Yeah, I wonder how well the 3 would even hold up under watchOS 7. Probably okay, but you know, like if I, and by the time this comes out, iOS 14 will be out anyway, but we'll go back to our regular discussion. But you know, the iPhone 8. Runs iOS 14, but it's kind of sluggish, you know, it's kind of lagging, and of course not all the features are on it. So you have to wonder, when are they going to start doing that to the Series 3?
Yeah,
that exactly. Right there might be enough of a price, you know. Well, I can have $80 more, like you said, and get a couple more watchOS updates out of it, which to me would make the difference worth it right there, you know. Or do I want something that's only going to last me a year? If you're someone who doesn't know whether you want to continue on with watchOS and that environment, then you still might lean toward a 3 because, you know, hey, if you decide you don't like it,
yeah,
well, you don't need another 2 years of updates.
True enough. And these are, I believe they're available to pre-order straight away and shipping on Friday, if I am not mistaken. Our colleague Michael was telling me beforehand that he's already in on the pre-order.
Oh, really? Six.
Yeah.
Huh. What does he have? Do you know?
I don't know what he has now, to be honest.
I know he has a watch, but I don't know which one it is. I think we can all three here say we are not getting a new watch.
No, I'm not. I think just because my 4 is still good for at least one more year. So, yeah.
I would think so. Maybe even 2.
Yeah. But and there's other things I want. I'll probably want a new iPhone. So, you know, there's only so much money in the bank.
Now that's like the best segue ever.
Well, it isn't because we ain't got no phones. We're onto iPads next, weren't we?
Oh, that's right.
Or will we? Yeah, we'll go onto the iPad now, and then we'll come back to the services then afterwards, including this fitness service. So the iPad, they announced a new entry-level iPad, if that's the right word, the one they just call iPad, which is a 10.2-inch screen, and it's got the, I suppose, legacy, if you want to call it that, design, the one with the home button and all that kind of stuff on the front, kind of big bezels, but a very good, capable device. They put a new A12 Bionic chip in it. I think that's really the key thing. It's essentially the same design as the previous model, as the 7th generation. This is the 8th generation, but just with a bit of an upgrade. And then they also announced the new iPad Air, which doesn't have a number on it, it's just the new iPad Air. And that has had a complete redesign. It's now got the same design as the iPad Pro, essentially. It's a similar size to the previous generation, but with a much bigger screen, or a bigger screen anyway, at 10.9 inches. It's kind of got that almost edge-to-edge thing going on. So new kind of sleek design, better screen, A14 Bionic, so it's actually got a better chip than the iPad Pro has now, which is interesting. Yeah, just much faster, 40% faster performance, much better graphics, the usual kind of upgrades. And this is the kind of the mid-range one, I suppose, or the high mid-range one. So if you want the kind of the new design, the fancy kind of, you know, full screen kind of display, all that kind of stuff, but you don't quite need the Pro, then the Air is for you, I guess. Do you guys have iPads? I don't know. I can't remember.
I do not. I had an iPad at one point when I was in college, but I got rid of it because it just never got used and collected dust on my shelf. Yeah.
And Scott?
I used to have an iPad mini for my own personal use. And then the iPod 7 came out and I got the iPod 7 and I'm really happy with that. So for my own use, no, I will not be getting a new iPad. You know, if my job came to me tomorrow and said, you know, you have that 3-year-old iPad, let's replace it. I'm not going to say no, but it's not something I would throw down my money on. If I was a student, I mean, depending on where I was in my academic career and what I had previously, maybe I would consider it. You know, I kind of get this sense that Apple is still trying to find their footing or trying to figure out what is going to work and what isn't. You know, you have all these different models now, which used to be one of the selling points of Apple. Well, you know, it's there's not so many models, so everything's not so fragmented. But now we've got all these different iPads, more watches coming on the market, and then we have the split between iPad OS and iOS, and it's getting more complex every year to keep up with.
Do you think? Yeah, I think it comes with the maturing of the products, I guess. But yeah. I think what they're going for, I suppose, is that you have the kind of the iPad, which is kind of your entry level, does all the basics well, great for education. Then you have the iPad Air for people who just want something a bit beefier, want to play some games and things maybe as well. Want the nicer display without the home button taking up space, all that kind of stuff. And then the Pro is for your serious pro workers. But by making this Air so powerful, they've kind of blurred the lines again a little bit, I think, because it's as powerful or even more powerful than the iPad Pro, depending on what you're doing, I think. I think maybe the Pro still has more graphics capability possibly, or more multitasking capability possibly, but it's basically probably faster in a lot of cases. It works with the Pencil 2 and the magnetic thing. It works with the new Magic Keyboard. So I think the only difference is, the main difference is now between the Pro and the Air is Face ID instead of, oh yeah, we should say that Touch ID is in the power button on this new iPad. So it does have Touch ID, but it's, you just press on the that side button, which I think is pretty cool. Whereas the iPad Pro has Face ID, and then the LiDAR detector thing on the camera, on the rear camera, is the other difference. Is there anything else I'm missing? Is there a difference between the Air and the Pro now?
No, I don't think so. I mean, one thing the Air has also done to converge with the Pro is adding USB-C instead of Lightning.
Yep, that was the only thing I can think of was the USB-C. You know what I'm kind of wondering? I know we're ways out from it yet, but there really wasn't a ton of stuff today, which is why I'm doing some of the speculation I'm doing. You know, you have this new Touch ID thing. Could they bring that into the iPhone 12? I would love to see that.
I was thinking the exact same thing, especially in this, even more so now with COVID, because I don't know if you've tried using Face ID and Apple Pay in a shop. It's not easy. Touch ID and the power button would be brilliant. I have a feeling it's not, because maybe they designed it for this iPad and they didn't have time maybe to get it into the iPhone, is my guess. But it would be amazing.
I think maybe the iPad Air, it might even be an experimental thing. Like, well, let's throw this at the market and see what happens. You know, we've got the Mini, we've got the Pro, we have all these other models.
Yeah.
But let's try some of this other new technology on it, see how well it does on the iPad. If it does great on the iPad, maybe they'll bring it to their flagship iPhones. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I've got to say, it looks really cool, this iPad. If I was in the market for an iPad, this is the one I would probably buy. But like, I have a 9.7-inch iPad Pro from 3-4 maybe years ago. And for what I do, which is mostly watching YouTube and Netflix and stuff, it's still doing, you know what I mean? I just don't need a new one. I kind of want to need a new one because I like the look of this iPad, but I can't justify it. But if it's a very cool device, though. But that's the thing, iPads, for a lot of us, they last years and years. But if you are going to buy one, if you are needing a new iPad, I think this is a great option for most people who kind of want the, like I say, some of the more modern features, but don't need an absolute pro model, you know. That's the iPad. And the other thing, the other big feature, I suppose, was the bundling of services. So it's called Apple One. People may have heard again the leaks and rumors about it, where they're going to have packages where you can get things like Apple Music, TV Plus, News Plus, and a new Fitness Plus, all in one bundle. They didn't give a huge great breakdown of the different packages. Is it just two packages? Is that what you guys grasped? I wasn't quite sure.
Moved so fast that particular part of the presentation moved like almost too fast for me to really. They were talking about all these services, but I didn't really catch what exactly how it broke down, or even if they did break it down in more detail.
Yeah, there was definitely a package like they called Entertainment or something. I had like Music, TV, Arcade.
I know you can get Premiere. I know you can get Premiere, what they're calling is where you can get News Plus added to it.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what role Fitness plays in the bundle, but if it saved me some money, I would probably get it because I'm already on Music and TV. So, but I have a feeling it won't. And I have I have the 99 cent 50 gig, or is it 50 gig for 99 cent iCloud already. So in the unlikely event that I can get one of a bundle that will make that cheaper, I will go for it. Otherwise, I have no interest in adding Arcade or News Plus personally.
So what exactly, that was the one thing I missed. I guess I'm not the only one, but do we know what exactly the prices are going to be on the packages?
If they announced it, it must have been visual because I didn't hear them.
I heard something like $14.99 US dollars.
Okay.
But I may have seen that not in the presentation itself, but looking after.
But there's definitely at least two tiers, and I think it's possible maybe there's more tiers. And then, of course, there's some services that are available in some countries and not available in others. So will there be tweaking of those packages across different countries? Will be interesting to see. The Fitness Plus is interesting as well. And then with these kind of things, I wonder how accessible it'll be. And I don't mean that in the voiceover sense, because I'm sure the app will be accessible. But if you've got somebody on a video screen telling you to follow their instructions, you know, I think we've all learned probably during COVID, if we're trying to do home workouts, that there's a lot of them out there that we can't follow very easily as visually impaired people. But that will be interesting to see if there are ones that we can use, because the Fitness Plus is cool. It's kind of syncs up with your Apple TV or your iPhone or whatever with your watch, and you pick a workout and they all, you know, sync up and give you your stats and all that kind of stuff. And it's workout sessions that you kind of follow along, and there's all different ones. It does look like a cool service, but at the same time, it's $9.99 a month or $79 for the year. So it's not cheap. So you'd really want to be using it to get value from it.
I think they'll get a lot of people who aren't even, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to do that, you know, sign up for the $80 a year, and a month later, I'll work out next week. I'll get back on it.
Like gym memberships like a new year, in January, yeah.
Yeah, like a New Year's resolution thing.
Lots of Christmas presents of annual subscriptions to Fitness Plus going around.
Yeah, it's the other thing is I hope they do audio description of the workouts. You know, one of the interesting things that would really be a selling point, I think, for some people is if they were audio described, because a lot of these workout systems that exist for people don't have audio description, and they don't necessarily do a great job of describing what they're doing verbally. I don't know if they would have to do that legally or not, you know, which was actually part of why I was wondering, is this why we're having audio described content with this live event? You know, there are different, here in the US anyway, there are different regulations on live content versus recorded content.
Yeah, same here.
So it'll be interesting to see if, because I'm assuming these are all going to be recorded videos, are they going to do audio description of them?
There's going to be new ones every week. It sounds like it's going to be the high volume is what makes me wonder if it will, if you know what I mean. I hope it does. And we all know Apple are good at thinking about accessibility in anything new they bring to market. So, you know, whether they'll be able to do that or not, or whether they will do it or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I'm living in hope. Whether I end up signing up or not, I don't know. But at least consider it if it was something that I could actually follow along. There will be a 30-day free trial, I believe, so, which is pretty good, I think, to really get a taste of whether you'll get use out of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, the other thing I found interesting was that the new iPad, kind of going back a little bit, but I just now thought of this. No mention of 5G, only LTE. And everyone keeps saying there's going to be 5G in the new iPhones, but I guess my question then becomes, okay, great, I have this 5G capable phone, but I don't have anywhere to use it, you know, because 5G is a very, I mean, first of all, it hasn't been developed very much, but second of all, the short range of it, it's great when you're right, really close to a cell tower, but when you get a little ways away and there's not another one to pick up the slack, it's you really don't even notice the difference.
Yeah, I think we're a good way off at being essential, and especially the iPad.
Also, I think carriers, they sort of, at least in the US, they're doing this thing where the term 5G, because that encompasses both the sub 6 gigahertz bands and mmWave, they're using picking the most convenient things. You know, we're deploying we're deploying 5G more widely, but 5G, what they're referring to in those things are sub 6 gigahertz deployments, whereas when they talk about speed and the great speed that 5G can bring, they're talking about mm wave. So it's really picking and choosing to really about what to advertise. So yeah, I mean, that was factored into my decision. I was thinking about getting the iPhone SE earlier this year, and that's what I ultimately got. Not to give any spoilers for when the iPhone comes out, we do a roundtable for that. But yeah. So, and I was thinking when I got this iPhone SE, you know, that doesn't have 5G either. But I'm not in an area where I believe there's anyone has deployed 5G transmitters. And even so, it's going to be a couple of years before that becomes more widespread. And in a couple of years, I'm most likely going to be looking for another phone anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's anywhere near essential at this point. And on an iPad, I haven't had cellular. I haven't bought a cellular model since my very first iPad 10 years ago. Because I've realized in that first year that I never used it, because I'm always on Wi-Fi with my iPad, and the odd time where I'm not, I just hotspot to my phone. That was pretty much wraps up the event that we had today, but they did throw a little surprise at us. We were all expecting maybe iOS 14 and iPad OS 14 and Watch OS 7 would come out maybe this Friday, was my own thinking.
Wow.
But no, it's coming out tomorrow, Wednesday the 16th. So we may as well have a quick, very quick chat about, we'll have loads of coverage on the website, of course. Thomas has done a range of podcasts about everything that's new in the new software. And Scott, of course, will be writing an article, I believe, Scott. And so loads of coverage there, but we can have a quick chat about what we kind of think are the highlights and maybe lowlights of iOS 14 and WatchOS 7.
Yeah, I think there are some great things that came to iOS 14. Although if you're a voiceover user, I'm not really sure how you feel about it, you know. I think for me, I'm not really sure. I'm split on my favorite feature between auto panning on a Braille display, which works really well, and back tap. Not necessarily a voiceover feature, but you can set up voiceover with back tap. But like for me, I have hearing aids that connect through MFI. And of course, because it's Bluetooth, you know, things are not always the most stable. And most of the time, toggling Bluetooth on and off will resolve the issue. Well, before, I had to, you know, talk to Siri to launch a shortcut to make it work. Mm. Now I can just double tap the back of my phone and it does it for me.
That is very cool, I gotta say. Yeah, I think, Backtap is definitely one of the more popular new features. Even it's an accessibility feature, but I'm hearing it talked about all over the place, really, as a useful new feature. I have it set personally for Notification Center and Control Center, because with the iPhone 11, with the SE, maybe it's a bit smaller, maybe it's not as much of an issue, but sometimes getting to the top of the screen and doing the gestures for those two can be a bit awkward, so having them on the back top, it just makes them a lot more reachable without having to readjust everything. So there's also the new home screens, of course, new and app library, so you no longer have to have pages and pages of apps. You can just have one page if you want, or however many pages you would like to have. And then all of your apps also then live in a thing called the app library, which is on the last screen. So if you go past whatever, however many pages you have, you go past the last one, and you'll have Apple have sort of pre-made these categories of apps like games or entertainment or productivity and so on. But there's also, you can do a 3-finger swipe down and you'll get an A to Z list of all of the apps. So I kind of like that feature. It's kind of, I'm now down to just two home screens plus the app library. Have either of you guys been using that feature over the summer?
Yeah, it's...
Go ahead, Tyler.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that's cool. That's one of the things I like about iOS 14 is if there's certain apps that I'm, you know, haven't used in a while and debating whether to keep them on my home screen so I don't have to scroll past them each time, but, you know, don't want to actually take them off my device, that's a good sort of middle ground. I just tuck them away in the app library. So I do like that feature.
Well, I sort of had the same idea in the sense that, you know, because when you delete those stock apps, they don't actually save you any space.
Mm.
They're just hidden. I have a folder on iOS called Useless.
Many people
do. That's where all my useless apps go. So I'm not sure if I'm going to use it or not, to be honest. Mm.
So, I mean, for me, what I do is if there are a number of useless apps that, like the Tips app, for example, I don't have much use for, and there, you know, various other apps that I've just forgotten about, and I just remove them just to they don't actually give me any space, but I just delete them off my device, so that they're just they don't show. And I've been able to do that since iOS 10, so that doesn't really make much of a difference to me. But I'm talking about apps that I've downloaded and use occasionally, but don't really need to be looking at on a day-to-day basis when I open up my phone.
Yeah, I'm the same. I have those two screens now, which get me to all the apps that I use pretty regularly. And then the app library just helps me easily find everything else. I don't really use their pre-made category things that often because I don't know. It's not always that accurate. You can find yourself looking for an app in there and you go, oh, is this going to be in productivity or is it going to be in the utilities? And, you know, I think it's easier just to bring up the A to Z and just find the app, to be honest.
Just use the search feature. It doesn't really matter where they dump them.
Exactly. But I think it's a definite step in the right direction. The other big change on the home screens is widgets, of course, which I think my downside to them is that the smallest widget is a 2x2 grid. So it's taking up the space of four apps, and then there are bigger ones as well. I think it'd be nice if there was maybe a 2x1 kind of size one, like something like the fitness rings or Pedometer Plus Plus. I'm thinking of these kind of apps where I would like to have a live widget on my home screen, but I don't need it to be giant, you know? And the stacked widgets is good. So you can have two widgets though sitting on top of each other. So again, you might do that. I'm going to plan to do that with the likes of fitness and pedometer and stuff on the same widget because it kind of makes sense. But have you guys used widgets or are you avoiding them?
I've used them. Like I put the weather widget, for example, on my home screen so I can see the forecast. But I think that's one of those things where I was excited for when they presented it at WWDC, but I feel like it's cooler in theory than it is in implementation. That's just my I sort of don't use them as enthusiastically today. I think I took my weather widget off and I just use, because even without the weather widget, I can still access the forecast relatively easily. I could use, I could ask Siri, I could go into the weather app, whatever. It's not like I was desperate for another way to do it. I just thought it'd be more convenient to have it on the home screen, which it is. But having a big, a grid of, adding more complexity to my home screen just can be a bit clunky.
Yeah, I'm with Tyler on that one completely. I tried it. I was like, oh man, this is going to be great. You know, I could, and believe it or not, it was the same app, the weather app. And I started using it, and I'm like, you know, this really isn't saving me that much time. You know, okay, and it might be one double tap difference, but I would rather have all that real estate on my home screen.
Yeah, I'd be similar in a sense. Like, I have one, and I don't plan to add any more because it is too much of a sacrifice in space. But I have a weather and fitness on a stacked widget, and then I plan to add Pedometer Plus Plus with it, assuming brings one out. But that'll be the only one, and then everything else is just, yeah. So I agree, it's not an absolute game changer for most people, I don't think. A lot of people probably never even realize they exist because your today screen is still there and you can still have all your widgets on that today screen, which is the screen to the left of your first home screen. So I think it maybe be interesting when more third-party apps start getting it. Another mainstream feature is the ability now to change Safari, or change your default web browser and default email app. I still use the default ones. I'm tempted by Chrome, but I kind of think Safari's mobile version is a little bit better. So I'm not sure, but it is cool that you could do that. People have been wanting that for a long time. Do you guys use other third-party ones for these, or are you sticking with the Apple?
I just left mine as it was. I mean, to me, the experience browsing like with Chrome versus Safari, maybe it's because I haven't used Chrome on iOS as much, but it really isn't all that different. I would happily entertain either of you guys' thoughts on one being better than the other, because I honestly don't know. Safari pretty much does what I need, so
yeah,
I just kind of left it. You know, as far as, you know, email, I use the native mail app, but that kind of gives me pause to think about maybe using Outlook. You know, but there's really, for me, it just seems like, you know, hey, I've been using mail for so long, and I have to use Outlook for my work account. So, should I just go ahead and put everything over there?
Yeah.
Part of me says yeah, but part of me is like, you know what? Keep your work email separate from your professional, you know, your work email separate from your home email. Keep them in two different places. That minimizes the chances of, you know, an email going out of with some bad content or something. a dirty joke or something out of my work email. That wouldn't be good.
Surely not you, Scott. God, no. Yeah, I'm exactly the same. Actually, my work email is on Outlook, and I'm kind of just going to leave it that way. It is a good app, though, but yeah, I kind of like to keep that bit of division. I prefer Safari to Chrome in terms of just finding the tabs and the buttons and things, but maybe that's just getting used to it, or maybe I actually prefer it. It's hard to know. On the Mac, I find Chrome is a bit faster than Safari with VoiceOver. It doesn't lag as much as VoiceOver, as VoiceOver doesn't seem to lag as much as Safari does, but I want to have the same browser on both because the favorites and tabs sync, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of, I have to make the decision, do I want Chrome on both or Safari on both as my defaults? What do you use, Tyler?
I use Safari on both Mac OS and iOS. And it suits my admittedly basic needs well. I definitely think it's welcome, and it's good that they added the choice for people to choose other default browsers and email clients, because if I was a business person, for example, I probably would use Outlook because I know that's the kind of the gold standard, if you will, for professional use, to have your work email, calendars, contacts, whatever else in that place. So, but I don't use it. I don't use Outlook. And I've used Chrome on iOS, but I, again, like Scott, I just didn't really see much of a difference and much of a reason to have another app that could perform the same functions as Safari. So, and I use it on my Mac too, so all my things sync. And for my needs, I don't get much of a lag, you know, unless a website's really busy with ads and, you know, embedded videos. That's another topic for another day. But yeah, other than that, my browsing is pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Cool. I suppose the biggest accessibility feature, apart from Backtap, but certainly from a VoiceOver point of view, the biggest new feature is, or improvement is, around screen recognition. Who would like to tell us a bit more about what that is and how it works?
Thomas, where are you?
I tried using it for a while, but I just found it so inconsistent. Like sometimes it would read things, sometimes it wouldn't. And I haven't used it thoroughly, so this should not be taken as a thorough review by any means. But I just found it like similar to the image descriptions, you know, that VoiceOver introduced with iOS 11. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know if it's just different elements. Are perceived by VoiceOver differently, or I don't know. And performance, I feel like, takes a bit of a hit. I don't know if that's improved at all since last time I've used it. I think it has potential to make things that are like apps that are potentially inaccessible to make them somewhat accessible.
Yeah, it makes them usable, I think would be the word. It's got me out of a pinch in a couple of places. Like even an app that I know that I use, a financial app that's almost completely accessible, but there's a couple of buttons that it just voiceover. It's not even that voiceover doesn't just says button. It's that voiceover can't even focus on the button. It doesn't know it's there. Mm-hmm. And when I turn screen recognition on, it can find that button. There's little things where it just gets you out of a pinch sometimes. And I definitely think it's a work in progress, but I think it's a huge step forward. And I actually think people may notice a huge improvement in image recognition as well. So if you go into your Photos app now, and just flick through the photos, you'll notice it gives pretty decent descriptions of every single photo. Yeah. A bit like when you when you'd run a photo through Seeing AI, and it would do that do, and after a few seconds it would come back and give you a description of the scene. It's doing that pretty much instantly now with VoiceOver by itself.
Mm. Yeah. I don't use photos much, but one thing that's interesting to me is they now added photo captioning. So you can add your own captions.
Yes, that's really cool as well. So if you want to put a label on your photos and they come back to it later, you'll know what photo it was.
Yeah. And again, I don't take pictures my only uses for the camera is to use Seeing AI for short text or whatever, or maybe Be My Eyes time and again. But other than that, I don't take many pictures. So I don't, maybe I could try out the image recognition.
Yeah. I don't take a lot, but I receive a lot. I mean, you know, family WhatsApp groups with a lot of pictures of babies and things. And it actually does an incredible job at times. Even though my family and stuff do tend to put captions on anyway, but it is good. Or even I've seen it on Facebook and on Twitter and stuff that I've been able to, even when they haven't captioned things well, that with the voice or on the web, VoiceOver is giving a half decent description. Scott, have you used these features at all?
Yeah. Well, where to start? I guess I'll start with screen recognition, since that's what we covered first. I only turn it on in an as-needed basis.
Oh, completely, so, me too.
Because, it'll mess up the formatting of your web pages and stuff if you leave it on and give you misinformation. But it's kind of like Tyler, it's hit or miss. Hmm. For me, depending on my use for it, it's more hit than miss. For example, I was on Facebook earlier, and a friend of mine had posted a picture of his dog. I was like, oh, well, this is a good chance to test it out. So I turned on screen recognition, and I moved to the image, and I found out that his dog is black and white with red eyes. I didn't know dogs had red eyes, but apparently they do. And, that's not like life-altering information, but I just found it really interesting to know that. You know, it was something that I was able to figure out just by using the technology I have. The image description feature seems to be a little more reliable in 14 for me. Mm. However, they used to call it detected text. I think now it's text recognition, but it's the same thing. It no longer works with Braille. So, no detected text here, unfortunately, which was a little hard to determine because, you have three different recognition, for all intents and purposes, tools going on. So I had to, turn them all off and, to try and figure out what the problem was. I knew something was missing from my descriptions, and fortunately, I have enough hearing left that I can, understand speech. But the speak detected text, which was functioning fine in 13, is not functioning in iOS 14 for Braille users.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, all right.
Also for Braille users, since we're on that topic, there's the really nice handy option in the rotor for screen recognition.
Yeah.
You turn it on or off. You don't have to enable it manually through settings for each app, although you can do that. There's also a customized command option for Braille display users. I believe Bluetooth keyboard users have one as well, but I'm not sure on that. Anyway, you can set up the command on a Braille display, which would be very handy. However, you are not able to actually get it to work. But I mean, that's a very minor thing. You know, you can just go over to the router option and turn it on that way, which is usually what I do. You know, one of the other mainstream features, because I'm just thinking about this, that I was hoping was going to be really useful, but it just ended up being really clunky, was emoji search. Have either of you tried that?
Yeah, I don't use it that much, though. Yeah, I get clunky, I think, is a good word. I found it a bit awkward. I wasn't quite sure how to use it at first. I had to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
But it I think the search is quite good once you get used to it, I guess. But yeah, the how it works is a bit odd. Kind of finding the little text field.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing with, you know, having to jump back and forth with keyboards and the rotor option for emojis is a little unreliable, I've found.
I think the switching of keyboards has never been a great experience since they brought in third-party keyboards even, hasn't it? It's always been a bit off.
Tyler, you use emojis at all?
Very, very rarely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I do for emojis? So I've used the keyboard shortcuts. So like if I type E, they all start with E for me. So if I got ESF, that's a smiling face emoji, you know, or, you know what I mean? EFC is fingers crossed, you know, things like that. Like I've just, all my favorite, obviously you can only remember so many of those, but all my kind of favorite day-to-day ones, I have little keyboard shortcuts set up instead.
Yeah, and you got to really make sure that you don't, you know, make it something that can trip it up. And you don't want to say, I love you, Mom, smiling pile of poo. You know, that's probably not what you want.
And there are so many emojis, too. I feel like now it's hard to know what kind, if you've never seen facial expressions in your life, like what any of it means. Like, it's like I just breeze right past them. I don't even think about them after a while. Mm. Like, I see them on Twitter and whatever, but yeah.
Who needs a toilet paper emoji? Please answer me that. I mean, plenty of people needed toilet paper earlier in the year, but the emojis is not helping them with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're a bit of fun, though. I like them. But yeah, there's so many. There's millions of them now. It's crazy. So you do need that search, I think, increasingly. But I also like that sometimes it doesn't always work. But sometimes if you just type the word in your regular message, it will give you the emoji as one of the suggestions. That's, you know, the quick suggestions that appear at the top of the keyboard. So without having to go into the emoji section.
Well, you have to have the emoji keyboard. I mean, this is my experience.
Oh, yeah. You have to have that enabled, but you don't have to go into the emoji keyboard necessarily. You can, if you just type, I don't know, love, it'll just show a heart as one of your word suggestions, you know.
Assuming it works, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a lot of instances where I'll even go, you know, I'll like go left and then go right to go back into the text field, and it's still not there.
Yeah.
So I tried it enough to write about it. I'm not putting any emojis in my article. I refuse. but I did it enough to realize that the shortcuts, text shortcuts, is definitely what I'm going to stick with. Mm. You know, I don't really use that many. I try to use them more with sighted folks, you know, but really, I'm not that great with them, you know. Like you, Dave, I can only remember so many text shortcuts.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, I know I have one for that, but what was it? It's like, I forget it.
Yeah.
So, are there any other major or even minor accessibility features or enhancements that stood out to you guys?
Well, I tested sound recognition. I don't know if you want to hear about
that. Oh, yeah.
I mean, no pun intended. Do you want to hear about that or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
So sound recognition is an interesting animal. I think it's just like voiceover recognition. It's something very much in its infancy. I had varying degrees of success with it. I had tested it before with a tornado siren. I don't believe you have those in Ireland.
No, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, we don't have them here in Charlotte either. And we had like four tornado warnings earlier in the year. But anyway, I was in a different location. I was in Michigan at the time. And they do have tornado sirens, but the closest tornado siren was about half a mile away. And with normal hearing, you can hear it, but it's certainly not going to wake you up, probably.
Mm.
The phone did not detect that.
Okay.
And I think the reason it didn't detect it is because it was so quiet. And that's the thing with the sound recognition. The sound's got to be really loud. And, you know, even if there's a dog barking in the distance, it probably won't alert you to that either. I mean, if the dog is right next to the phone barking, it'll definitely pick it up.
Yeah, I suppose that's a tough balance because you don't want your watch to wake you up and tell you there's a dog barking, but you do want it to wake you up and tell you there's a tornado coming. So,
yeah, I prefer my phone wake me up before the tornado itself, honestly.
Yeah.
But the other thing about the sound recognition is that the fire alarm and smoke alarm and all those things, they're very... And I understand that, you know, they don't want to be liable for, well, my phone told me that a smoke alarm was going off and it wasn't. Mm. But that's, I haven't had any false positives with it. I have not had a fire alarm, smoke alarm, and not set it off. But like when I pulled up a fire alarm on YouTube, it didn't set it off, which is probably for the better. You don't want those false positives. But because they're taking those precautions to avoid false positives, I think they need to develop an option for notification that's a bit less discreet. You know, if a fire alarm's going off, even if it possibly could be a false alarm, I would rather have a, you know, like the emergency alerts that we have here, where it will just keep going off until you do something with it.
Mm.
And it'll stop vibrating and alerting you with a sound, but it stays on your... You have to dismiss it, or you know you're going to notice it on your home screen. I kind of wish they would do that with the fire alarm and the smoke alarm, but I understand it's a, you know, again, it's a technology very much in its infancy, so they may just not have the confidence for that yet.
Yeah, I suspect, and it's even things like you left a tap or a faucet, as you guys call it, on, things like that, like you have the water running or something like that. Like it's, I'm not hearing impaired, so I guess it hasn't been a factor, but you know, I don't know if you guys or if you, Tyler, as well have tried this this feature at all.
I have not.
Oh, okay.
Well, the water running is the only one I've had give me false positives.
Okay, which that could be like water running through the pipes, I guess. Or
I don't think it's that sensitive, but can you actually hear that? Like, can you hear water going through the pipes?
It depends, yeah. Or you might hear the person upstairs having a shower sometimes or something,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
If you hear the water turn on and off, sometimes there's a little clank, or there can be. It really depends on the plumbing environment.
The other thing...
I can pick it up.
Yeah. The other thing people maybe, or I'm sure will be keen to know, is around bugs, and we won't get too into the weeds here, but because it's just an overview, but obviously iOS 13 wasn't the smoothest launch in history. How have you guys found 14? Do you think we're in for a better experience than we were last year?
Hard to say. It's an our bugs file we'll definitely have up on the site in the very close future, but from what I found, the bugs are not, there are no bugs that we would necessarily classify as serious bugs. Like, I don't think it's as chaotic as last year in the sense that there were a lot of notably serious issues with the 13.0 release. Mm. And then they released 13.1 several days later, which was actually in testing before 13.0 was even released. So that really spoke volumes about the development challenges of that. So I don't think we're, you know, at that level where it's not as buggy, but at the same time, it's not like iOS 12. And of course, whether you consider an issue serious, moderate, or minor, that's largely that only you can make that call and determine when to upgrade. So I'd suggest you just look at our bugs post when it goes live, and user comments from people who we're testing the beta, see what they think, and see what people who get the release when it comes out tomorrow, you know, what they think, and that's really the best play.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It might even be up by the time people are listening. A lot of people are listening to this. And yeah, I it's definitely a much more stable release than 13.0 was, I think, a year ago for me. And all summer, it's been more stable. 13, that was a difficult summer last year.
Unlucky 13, as it was very quickly referred to as.
Whereas I was able to run 14 on my main device happily enough this year. You know what I mean? Yeah, there were some irritating bugs along the way, and lots of bugs came in, and lots of bugs have been fixed. Not all have been fixed. There are still some there, but like you say, not too many serious ones.
I kind of look at it as iOS 13 was a swarm of bees, right? A lot of bugs. iOS 14 has the same swarm, but those are flies. They're annoying, but you know, you can probably put up with them. iOS 8, those are murder hornets right there. That's what that was.
Yeah, don't, that was an absolute, that. iOS 8 was an absolute dumpster fire, but I like that analogy. Yeah. iOS 13 was a bees swarm and iOS 14 is a fly infestation. I like that metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Tyler's advice is good. If you are concerned about bugs and things like that and whether or not you should update straight away, have a look at our post, have a look at the comments, because as we always say, our disclaimer is we're a limited size team. We haven't necessarily caught everything, but we will have a list of the bugs we've found that have yet to be fixed up, and people will be free to comment, and hopefully lots of people will comment on their experiences as well, especially those who have been testing it. So if you are a bit unsure, you know, do make sure you check that out first before updating. That probably wraps us up, guys. I think it's been interesting enough event today, and an interesting release of software coming, and I think we've got more to look forward to in probably October. We all suspect an iPhone 12 event to come along, so still lots to come. Please do check out appleviz.com, the podcast feed. Thomas Tomville has done a rake of podcasts on everything new in iOS 14, and of course we've got articles up there, including Scott's article and the bugs file as well, so do check that out. Scott and Tyler, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be back on here.
Always fun. All right. Thanks, guys. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the community of Apple Viz. For the latest in resources and tips and tricks to help you get the best experience from your Apple device, visit us online at www.appleviz.com.